Hello, friends, here and zooming in from distant places, perhaps. And you can give us your scorecards later. Fortunately, there's only one entrant to the Eurovision Sermon Contest today, so I think I might win. Anyway, living a fruitful life, peace and faithfulness. Well, you've heard the sermon already. Ben gave us that nice little video, and I only need amplify it a little bit. I spoke here about one of the spiritual gifts last July, specifically about prophecy. I would like to think that since then you have lots of prophets and oodles of prophecy, though they are spiritual gifts, not entitlements, and God gives them as he pleases, however good my sermon was or wasn't then. But last week, Colin gave a good introduction to this series, Living a Fruitful Life, in which he listed the Apostle Paul's 9 examples of fruit of the Spirit, Galatians 5, 22 to 23, if you wanted to look it up later, and his 9 gifts of the Spirit, 1 Corinthians 12, verses 8 to 10. Now, did you notice that all the gifts are in some way supernatural, whereas the fruit of the Spirit is not? You may know lots of people exhibiting exemplary love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, or self-control. I trust you're all like that here. Though there are always opportunities for learning more, especially if you have some difficult relatives or you like driving fast, like a Ukrainian guest, Artem. He recently went to that famous racing track in Germany, Nürburgring, and raced around there quite a lot. But he and Irina are in Poland at the moment. Anyway, there are lots of atheists and others who don't tick the Christian box in the census form, and yet they can be loving, joyful, peaceful, patient, kind, good, faithful, gentle, and self-controlled too. And let's be thankful that they are. But if they started to speak miraculous words of wisdom or knowledge, if they had tremendous faith or healing power, if they did miracles, if they prophesied or could discern spirits, I'm not talking about whiskey here, even though we have been to Scotland recently, or suddenly becoming multilingual, you'd think there was something a bit strange going on. Either you've been miraculously transported into the world of Marvel comics and superheroes, or watch out, there are Christians about. And that's what was happening in Paul's time, though not to Paul himself until a bit later. The apostles got tongues of fire on their heads, try asking your hairdresser for that, and spoke in all the modern languages of the time without even having Google Translate to help them. Incidentally, those are both, in a way, allusions to the Old Testament, Moses and the burning bush, and the reversal of what happened at the Tower of Babel, when God confused them with multiple languages. And then, when others became Christians, they received the Spirit too. And the sign of that, especially for Gentiles and non-Jews, was speaking in other languages or tongues. But to return to the fruitful life, why do so many people exhibit the fruit of the Spirit when they don't have the Spirit? How can people know we are Christians by our love when there are so many other loving people around? It's hard to compete sometimes. Take, for instance, the guy in the film Bank of Dave. Seen that? Oh, great. In that film, it's a true story about Dave Fishwick, a working-class van salesman in Burnley, who, despite opposition and a lot of regulation, he managed to set up a community lending company, which is actually called Burnley Savings and Loans. That's a great film. You can see it on Netflix, apparently. Now, one answer to this conundrum is that in the last 2 millennia, Christianity has so permeated our culture, especially in the West, that it's become normal to be kind and self-controlled and all the rest. It's sort of expected of us. It's taught in schools, it's passed on by parents, most of them, and it becomes acceptable behavior. the charm of the gospel in a way has rubbed off on everyone to varying degrees. Many people are good because that's the environment they're nurtured in. But that can't be the only reason, otherwise we'd expect to see everyone showing at least some of the fruit, and clearly many don't. And the radical elements of Jesus' manifesto, such as loving your frenemies, are completely lost on those who are not Christians, and sadly on the few who are. Sadly, we don't get any plaudits for living the fruitful life. We often hear about so-and-so, a successful businessman or woman, or a successful actor, or investment banker, if you want to spit, go outside. That simply means they made loads of money, or they're famous. But what about a successful bishop, successful church leader, flower arranger, preacher, possibly Billy Graham? And we don't hear so much about a fruitful businessman or woman or church leader or anyone, in fact. The Apostle Paul would say that a successful life was a fruit of the flesh, whereas a fruitful life was a product of the Spirit. And all Christians should know that, really. A second possible answer to the conundrum, why there are so many people that are good around, could be that they are simply born that way. I know we are all sinners, and some do that better than others, but this is nature instead of nurture. Some people are born quite good, and some people are born bad. And by and large, people don't change very much. Sometimes a bad person will become a Christian, and their behavior will change radically, which gets noticed and even leads others to Christ. We might change for the better over time, but it's hard to notice in yourself. Talking of good people brings us to the story of Daniel. There have been a lot of political assassinations lately. Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, Donald Trump, well, not yet. To name three, and Suella Braverman, well, she jumped before she was pushed. And in the Bible, too, there are many stories of political assassinations. Haman tried to do it to Mordecai in the book of Esther. Jezebel tried to get Elijah. And then, of course, there was Jesus. But that plot had a twist at the end, as we know. The deadly sins today are not lust, gluttony, greed, sloth, wrath, envy, and pride, but sexual abuse and bullying. In Daniel's time, the fatal sins were choosing the wrong God and not worshipping your leader. There was no room for Republicans in those days. They didn't have democracy, elections, or a free press, in inverted commas, to do the assassination. What they had was a fiery furnace, B, lions, C, a king, and D, the law of the Medes and Persians, which could not be changed. To backtrack a little, Nebuchadnezzar II of the Neo-Babylonian Empire had captured Judah, the southern Jewish kingdom, in 587 BC. This was some time after the capture of the northern kingdom by the Assyrians. So this was the time of the exile, 70 years, a consequence of the Jews stubbornly refusing to follow God. Neba, as I'll call him, got Ashpenaz to choose some of the best Israelites. They had to be either royals or nobles, to be handsome young men, quick to learn, knowledgeable, and qualified to service in the king's palace, whatever that may mean. Oh, and not just Jews, because they went around bringing in people from all sorts of nations. Now, if they passed that entrance exam, they were sent to Eton and Oxford, or the Babylonian equivalent, for 3 years. Well, things haven't changed very much. The people running our country went to Eton and Oxford, studied PPE, politics, philosophy, and economics. They had rich parents and good connections. And if you want to read about that, read the excellent book called Chums by Simon Cooper, which you can get on your gadget, believe it or not, from the excellent Suffolk Libraries. Or you can nip down to the library and they'll order it for you. That excellent service, write to your county council about how good it is, and the fact that my wife works for them is purely coincidental. But no, it's one of the best books I've read so far. Now, apparently Oxford does now give degrees to women. Anyway, these select Jews and others entered the VIP lane and they were offered special rations. But Daniel said they were vegans, so they opted out of the royal food, but God still blessed them. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego began to run Babylon until Neb had a bad dream. He got very paranoid. He ordered a radical cabinet reshuffle. Execute the lot of them, all the wise men. But Daniel, being wise and tactful, because that's the sort of bloke he was, and perhaps his 3 years of education helped, he negotiated a stay of execution, literally, and convened a hasty prayer meeting. Was Daniel being peaceful at this point? I suspect not. Was he being faithful? Yes, and God told him the dream and what it meant. Neb promoted him to be prime minister, the others to senior cabinet ministers. But not long after that, chapter 3, Neb introduces a loyalty test in the form of a gold image, a false idol, perhaps a bit like Brexit, which everyone had to fall down and worship on pain of death. Rather worse than being sacked from the cabinet, actually. This gave the native Babylonians a chance to get back at the Jews, especially Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, because they didn't follow Neb's gods or worship the golden image. Why did they need a blazing furnace anyway? I don't know. Perhaps the king was keen on pottery. And where was Daniel while his three friends were getting superheated? We don't know. But we do know that the political assassination failed. They got promoted again. But Neb himself didn't change at all. He had another bad dream, which Daniel interpreted, and Neb himself became a vegan, a political outcast, living outdoors with long hair and long nails, eating grass. Times passed, and in chapter 4, we read how the next king, Belshazzar, which means Bel protects the king, Bel being a false god, he experienced the writing on the wall. You've heard of that, I'm sure, during his feast. Again, Daniel came to the rescue, although not to Belshazzar's, as he died that night, but not before Daniel was promoted to the third highest ruler in the kingdom. Then in chapter 6 comes another political assassination attempt. The new king Darius the Mede, only 62, he didn't have to wait quite as long as Charles III, he tried to promote Daniel yet again to be in charge of the whole kingdom. Naturally, this didn't please the other 119 satraps who tried to find some dirt on him, but they could not. They found no corruption or negligence. He was trustworthy. There were no lies to Parliament, no adultery, no ambition to oust Darius as world king, no illegal parties, no corporate greed or tax evasion. He was untouchable. So they had to find another way. They asked the king to outlaw prayer, and not just within a certain distance of an abortion clinic, but everywhere to any god or human. The king, not being gifted with wisdom, agreed and put it into law. Was Daniel being peaceful at this point? Yes, because he carried on praying. Was he faithful? Definitely. But to God, not the king. We have none of Daniel's speeches and we know nothing about his politics, but we know how the story ends. The king realizes how stupid he's been but the laws of Medes and Medes and Persians cannot be changed. Luckily for him and for Daniel, God rescues him in the private zoo, and Daniel's opponents fall victim to a successful assassination instead. Did you know, by the way, that used to be a zoo at the Tower of London? They had elephants and everything. Amazing. Now, Daniel lived to see the reign of Cyrus, during which the Jews began to return to Israel. The rest of the book includes various dreams about four beasts and a ram and a goat. There's a long prayer. There's a vision of one who looked like a man. That's the Son of Man. And of course, you will have heard of one of the Gospels. And various prophecies, including about the end times. That's a very short tour of the book of Daniel, which shows that the God of the Jews will deliver those who are faithful to him, even from assassination attempts. The book itself is unusual, and it's written in both Hebrew and Aramaic. Aramaic was the common language of Palestine in Jesus' time, and it's still actually used by the Syrian Orthodox Church today. Most of the Jewish books not written in Hebrew were rejected by the Protestants and shoved into the Apocrypha, but the book of Daniel survived, except for there were some other little bits at the end that we don't have in most Bibles. Scholars disagree widely about the date it was written. Some say 7th century BC, and others say 2nd century BC, depending largely on whether they believe Daniel was a genuine prophet or not. But sadly, we'll have to end our Old Testament study and get back to a fruitful life. Daniel was certainly a good role model for being at peace under duress and being faithful. Two of Paul's list of the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians 5. Did you notice peace and faithfulness in the song? Right. As a prophet and dream interpreter, Daniel certainly had God's Spirit in him. He may have been born a good person and nurtured in a loving environment, but it was God's Spirit that made the real difference. How can we follow his example? How can we encourage the fruit of the Spirit to grow in us? Well, Colin said quite a lot about that, so at least I can cut and add to an amazingly long sermon, and we can all get home in time for lunch. That's good. But I had said earlier that people don't often change. Colin reminded us that without Jesus, we're wasting our time. You cannot bear fruit unless you remain in me, said Jesus in John chapter 15. And if you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. In our gardens and fields, some fruit comes almost by itself, like Bramley apples. They just keep on coming unless you chop the tree down. All plants need the right soil and climate, water and sun, and some like compost, some don't. But grapevines, which Jesus was talking about there, need pruning and looking after. We can't follow Jesus' radical manifesto of love and bear his kind of fruit unless it's through him, following him, remaining connected to the main branch, which is Jesus. Now, I hope I'm telling you things you already know, but to relieve the monotony, let's have a little song or two. Not a burden we bear, not a sorrow we share, but a toil he doth richly repay. Not a grief nor a loss, nor a frown nor a cross, but is blessed if we trust and obey. Join in if you want. Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. I want to walk with Jesus Christ all the days I live of this life on earth, to give to him complete control of body and of soul. Follow him, yield your life to him. He has conquered death, he is King of kings. Accept the joy which he gives to those who yield his life to him. Incidentally, so we'll be talking about joy and love in 2 weeks' time. Another way of putting it is to live by the Spirit, to walk in the Spirit daily. Paul makes frequent references to this in his letters, for instance, Romans 8. Set your minds on the things of the Spirit. As well as following Jesus, learning to listen to him and recognize his voice, which is the voice of the Spirit, and obey it in our daily lives, we can, as Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 12, eagerly desire the greater gifts. And why not the fruit of the Spirit as well? Take your 5 a day. You may not have been born with a peaceful mind, where phlegmatic people like me have a bit of a head start, I think, on that. And you may not have been taught faithfulness at home or at school, but hey, the Spirit of God overcomes such minor obstacles. Remember Colin's story, if you heard it, about Corrie ten Boom having to forgive the prison guard. She had to make the move to extend the hand of fellowship, and then forgiveness came. Pray for those patients' learning opportunities, especially when stuck at traffic lights or in a traffic jam. Try being kind to your enemies or even other drivers. Be peaceful, be faithful. Paul gave us a list of 9 for starters, and that list certainly isn't exhaustive. See if you can practice your 5 fruits a day. If you can only manage one, your life may not be as fruitful, but it's a start. Be fruitful, be like Daniel, peaceful, faithful. Watch out for those lions when you visit the zoo. Give them a little message from Daniel. Hello, friends. Thank you.